So hello, we are here today with Dr. BJ Fogg, who is director of the Persuasive Tech Lab at Stanford University and creator of Tiny Habits, a fun and effective program that helps you easily create new behaviors in your life. Over 28,000 people have gone through this program. It's 5 days, less than 30 minutes total, gotta love it, and free. So welcome, BJ.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited because, you know, the one thing about what you do and habits is that, you know, when we approach wanting to make a change in our lives, we treat things like, oh, I should drink more water or eat more fruit, the same as if we want to do something like lose 20 pounds or clean out our inbox or go to more networking events. But you have this behavior grid that outlines different ways that behaviors can change. So maybe you can tell us about that and why the kind of change that we want to make actually matters when we get started.
Yeah, you know, there are some behaviors you want to stop doing or reduce. And there are some behaviors you want to start doing. And the way that you go about those is different. And so you can't lump all of behavior change into one bucket and think there's one formula or approach for it. My work focuses on helping people bring new behaviors into their lives. And I do almost no work with stopping behaviors. That's a different approach. It has its own, levels of sophistication that I haven't studied.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's actually much easier to bring behaviors into your life than to stop a behavior that you've been trying to stop for a long time. And so I advocate, you know, create lots of new habits in your life, and you can dramatically change your life by creating lots of habits, including small ones.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. Two things in terms of what you're saying. One is if you create lots of new habits, in some respects, maybe they can even crowd out the old habits, you know, replacing some of those habits that maybe you want to stop doing. Have you had any experience with that? Is that kind of just anecdotal way?
Yeah, well, I think you're right, but I haven't studied it scientifically, so I can't really put a stake in the ground and say that's how it works. But I think in my own life and anecdotes from people who have done tiny habits, for sure, you know, it seems like you can create new habits that push out the ones you don't want or make the old behaviors inconsistent with the new identity that you're creating with the new ones. And eventually the new identity wins over.
You know, that's really an interesting point about this new identity and creating habits that fit that new identity. You know, in the work that I do, and when people want to reinvent themselves, this idea of having a new identity is a really big shift. But then sort of commensurate with that, they want to make a big change in their lives. And your work is really all about making small, tiny changes. So talk to us about why that's a much more effective way to go than trying to make a big, huge change all at once.
Oh, I have so much to say about this. So I'll try to stay brief. I can't worry. It's a lot of questions. It is much easier to make small changes in your life than big changes. The motivation level doesn't have to be super high. If you're trying to make a big, hard change, your motivation has to be high and it has to stay high. Say, for example, if you decided you're going to run for an hour a day starting tomorrow, you got to be super motivated tomorrow, the day after, and the day after. And the day that your motivation drops, or you have a competing motivation, like you have to make cookies for your kid's bake sale tomorrow, guess what? You're not running that day, and then you feel like, oh, I failed. Or, you know, I didn't do what I wanted. And a lot of people just pretty much give up at that point. Whereas if you pick something really small, like I'm going to, you know, do 2 push-ups every day, we can go further on that one because I do a lot of push-ups, then it's pretty easy to get done. Your motivation doesn't have to be super high, and you can do those push-ups even if you have to cook cookies for a bake sale. And the way it works is change leads to change, and in some ways it seems like it doesn't even matter the size of the change. If you can just start changing something, a few important things happen. One is it frees you up to make other changes in your life. So think of it as you're building actually learn how to change. Behavior change is a skill, and we might want to come back to that. And third, you build confidence that you can change. And the confidence you get from making small changes is disproportionately large. In other words, by making small changes, it's easier to do. You'll learn how to change, and your confidence for change will go up from making even just a small, simple change.
You know, that's really, I want to start, there's so much in what you said. I want to start with the confidence piece, because I know that when people come in, you know, their confidence is really low. So the idea of a tiny, tiny change actually having a disproportionate effect on building your confidence is really interesting. Why is that?
You know, that's such a great question. I don't know exactly the answer, but what I do know, you know, from coaching thousands of people in tiny habits, that it absolutely is a phenomenon that exists. If you, you know, one of the things I advocate is for people to floss one tooth. If you're not flossing at all, start with flossing one tooth.
One tooth?
One tooth, yeah. And as people do that, and as they feel successful doing that, that second part is important. I get all these emails saying, BJ, it's crazy. All I'm doing is flossing one tooth and I feel awesome. And now I'm making other changes. And this doesn't make any rational sense, but is this normal? And I can say, yeah, that's normal. There's something about how our brains are wired that when we feel successful as a change, even as a tiny one, it then leads to other changes. And part of that is the confidence goes up. And what I see is that in the data that I get, I see about 15 to 28% of the people every week, that ranges in there, have stepped up and make a big change in their life as a result of making the small change, like flossing one tooth. That's within 5 days.
Wow.
And so I see it over and over. Why? I don't know exactly why. I just know it happened.
That's a pretty big phenomena there.
Yeah.
So starting from flossing one tooth, which just seems kind of ridiculously small, like how can I celebrate myself for one tooth, to, you know, 15 to 28% of the people moving on to a bigger change. So do you think that it's that energy and that momentum that then starts to build on itself, or just the feeling of change is possible?
I think it's both of those. I think it's both of those. And, you know, I do like the floss one tooth as a starting point for people who are feeling discouraged or defeated or just, you know, like they're not going to succeed, in part because I think in our culture it's kind of built into us, you should be flossing. And
right.
Yeah, we get that at the dentist. And also, I really think there's something about looking at yourself in the mirror in the bathroom as you're flossing one tooth, and you are seeing somebody in the mirror who is changing their behavior.
Right.
You're watching yourself succeed. So I actually think there's something magical about that particular tiny behavior.
You know, that's true, because flossing, you know, that's one of those things that the people who floss, and I have to put myself on the ones who, like, inconsistent flossing, although my dentist, whenever she asks me, hey, have you flossed? And I'm like, no. And she said, well, at least you don't lie.
Good for you.
Good for me, right, exactly. But I have to admit, I'm very inconsistent about it. So I always put the people who floss regularly as, you know, oh, those are like the people who really, you know, are out there, like, you know, pumping life and stuff like that. And that would not be me. So I like this one. It appeals to me. What other kind of tiny habits do you recommend for people? Because I think in this world, sometimes people think what we think is tiny really isn't tiny.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, pick small behaviors that you actually want in your life. Don't pick things that feel like an obligation or you feel like you should do. As you practice creating habits, again, I think habit formation is a skill. It's something you can practice. It's something you can get really good at, just like playing the piano or cooking or dancing or playing chess. And you get good by practicing in the right way. And so you need to start practicing with behaviors you want, not so that's first and foremost. And And then if you make them really, really small, and in the tiny habits method, we call them, you know, tiny behaviors, then those are much easier to do, and they're not so dependent on motivation going up and down. So floss one tooth, I think, is a classic. Another classic is doing 2 push-ups. Another one that I think is very powerful, this is my favorite habit, and the recipe goes like this. After my feet touch the floor in the morning, I will say, it's going to be a great day. So the new behavior is saying it's going to be a great day. And I know that sounds kind of a little goofy, loopy California speak, but, you know, I'm a scientist and I'm very skeptical and critical of things. But that particular behavior seems to set you on an upward spiral for your day. So that's one that, and I get a lot of reports on the impacts of that, how it just changes the direction of the day. A lot of people report in that, you know, the tiny habit recipe goes like this. After my head touches the pillow at night, I will think of one thing I'm grateful for. So having that gratitude habit at the end of the day seems to change how people process the day. So as they're going through the day, their brain is watching for things to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pick the right tiny behaviors, they have this ripple effect or cascading effect. But, you know, first and foremost, pick things that you want. Pick behaviors you want in your life.
You know, those are such great ones. I mean, one of the things that I always recommend to my clients is this gratitude list. And I like the fact that you've broken it down to an even smaller tiny habit, because I tell them, you know, to come up with 4 things, more or less, for the challenge and the practice of, you know, training their mind to notice the good things.
Yeah.
It is a practice, to your point. Yeah. And it really does shift our experience of our life and our mindset.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think if people, those behaviors are not cute, it's not like an hour running, it's not like a lot of exertion, but by doing very effective small things and by doing a lot of them, you have a huge impact on your life. I mean, even the one good small one has an impact, but then as you do 5 or 10 or 20 and eventually dozen, it adds up and your life gets transformed.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about adding on because, you know, we in this world, it's like rarely motivated. So at what point do you add on to this tiny habit, and approximately, you know, how many can you have going on at one particular time?
Well, let me start with the second one. You can have hundreds and hundreds. In fact, we do.
Really?
In life. Yeah, every day. You go through the way you tie your shoe is a habit. The where you put your socks in the drawer is a habit. Which chair you sit. I mean, it goes on and on and on. How many can you acquire at once? I think you can acquire certainly 3. And that's what the tiny habits method has you do, is work on 3 tiny habits during the week. I think you could get 12 or 20 in a week if you are skilled at the method. Going back to the first part of the question, basically, how do you grow them? One of the things, you need to do a better job of teaching this in tiny habits, but one of the key things is to always have the habit be the tiny behavior and not raise the bar on yourself. And let me explain why. Let's go back to flossing one tooth.
Okay.
So after you floss one tooth for a while, it gets easier and easier to floss one tooth. You know exactly where the floss is. You know how to wrap it around your fingers. You know which teeth. You know, and it just gets easier. The more you do a behavior, the easier it gets. And eventually, it will take relatively less effort to floss all your teeth. Once you get skilled at it, you can floss all of them pretty easily, no big deal. However, in the tiny habits method, you always see the habit as just one tooth, and whenever you do more, you count it as extra credit.
Oh, really?
And that's an important framing. It means the day that I'm in a super big rush and have to run out the door for something, and I just brush my teeth, and I think, okay, all I have to do is floss one tooth, fine. I just floss one tooth and I go, and it's good for me, I succeeded. Whereas if I raise the bar on myself, like I have to floss all my teeth, I might be tempted to skip it. And then it's like, oh, I didn't do the habit. So by keeping the bar low at that tiny behavior level and do more when you want to, do more when you can, but don't raise the bar on yourself. There's something about framing the behavior change in that way that keeps you succeeding day after day. And when you do more, you kind of see yourself as the A student or the one that's doing extra credit.
You know, that's really huge because one of the things that I read when I was going through your work is that habits are never permanent, that they're always on a continuum. So if you're raising the bar on yourself and then all of a sudden you don't meet that, then it can knock you back off the whole pattern of the habit.
Yeah, exactly. There's something weird about our culture. I wish somebody would explain it to me where we got this, but we tend to be very black and white thinkers. Like either we're doing it or we're not doing it. Either we're exercising or we're not. And when we have a single failure, often people just say, oh, I blew it. I give up. And so part of what I've learned and part of what the Tiny Habits Method teaches is you're practicing and you're revising. So you're practicing this new habit. And if it doesn't work, you just revise it. You say, oh, maybe I put it in the wrong spot of my day. Maybe I made the behavior too big. And so you don't look at, when you don't do your intended behavior, you don't look at that as a failure. You look at it as an opportunity to redesign. So basically you're designing habits into your life, just like you'd arrange furniture in a room. And if you put a chair in the corner and the next day you say, you know what, it doesn't really work in that corner. You don't get down on yourself or give up. You try a different corner, a different part of the room. That's the same way to think about practicing habits and revising habits, practice and revise. It's really part of the skill of behavior change, especially habit formation, is to see it as a design problem and not as a motivation problem.
Wow. That is a big shift from the way that our culture views things, because we are very much like you either win or lose. And that's it. So the idea that there's really no failure, it's really about gathering information, using that information to tweak, revise, and then the next day seeing what works. I mean, that's a very neutral, non-judgmental way of approaching things. That's not generally how we do that.
No. And, you know, 10 years ago, I didn't know this. And so I've learned it over time, and I've been teaching it, and I see how effective it is. And again, I don't know why our culture is wired in this very black and white, very brittle way, and we are for some reason. And one thing, I mean, I encourage people, you celebrate the upside, you recognize your successes, but when you have setbacks, you don't say, oh, I did that. You say, oh, that means I just need to redesign. I need to figure out what piece didn't work and just change it. So behavior change, at least bringing new habits into your life in this way, there's no guilt associated. There's no real sense of failure. It's all upside. And so you recognize the successes and you don't feel guilty or bad or weak or lacking willpower when it doesn't happen. Because frankly, it's not a result of willpower being weak. It's just you don't have the right design, the right recipe yet. And you just keep playing around, frankly. I do it as playful and fun. You keep playing around with your behavior till you get the right thing that clicks.
So that's really, it's a way of partnering and playing and having fun with yourself and with the process. And what I love about that too is that it's also very customized. And that's another thing that we in our society think that, you know, there's one way to do it as opposed to what you're laying out, which is understand what works for you, both personality-wise and life-wise.
Yeah, I love your comments. Awesome. We could talk a long time. Yeah, exactly. Let's take a pretty common aspiration that people have. Lose weight and keep it off. Okay? And so a lot of people want that.
Yeah, and can I just interject before you explain that I have lost 100 pounds, so I am totally interested in what you have to say about that.
Okay, and you can say whether you think I'm right or wrong on this. And you know, losing weight is not a behavior. It's the result of a whole bunch of other behaviors. And there are a lot of things you have to learn to do in your life to lose weight and keep it off. But there's no one magical way, you know, one one way that fits everybody, and there's no one path. And so of the, let's just say there are 50 behaviors. One would be drink water. One is, you know, do cardio. One would be do strength training. One would be eat differently. A lot of them would be eat differently. Well, if, for example, like I really love popcorn. And of the 50 behaviors, it might be give up popcorn. Well, guess what? I'm not going to do that one. I'll do the other 30. And so if you find the behavior, you don't have to change every single behavior to get that outcome. You need to find the ones that you want to do and you're able to do. And there's no, I think there's no one path or one solution. And you have to figure out what works for you. And especially, what are the behaviors I can do from now on the rest of my life? It's not a temporary thing that I'm just doing to lose the weight and then I'll go back to, you know, whatever, eating pizza. It's, am I cool with giving up pizza the rest of my life? In our home, we, over time, you can't do it all at once. I also believe you can't do it all at once because you're learning skills. You're learning skills. We have ways of preparing food in advance. So these vegetables are ready to go in the fridge. We created a policy of no ice cream in the home. That's a pretty big jump. No bread in the home, no cheese in the home. You know, little by little, we did it as a household. And over time, things worked and some things didn't. And some things that didn't work, like, guess what? I really do want to eat popcorn, so I'm not going to give that up. But the ice cream, we stuck with. And so it's a step-by-step process where you're learning new skills. And what those particular behaviors are, I think, can be different for every person.
You know, I totally agree with you on that. You know, I think one of the big failures around weight loss is this idea that there is some magic bullet or one way, and that once you discover that one way, then everything's solved. Instead of understanding who are you, what's your life, you know, what works for you. I mean, I know for me, you know, it was exactly as you said. Once I said to myself a couple of things. One was, you know, I had to do things that I was willing to do for the rest of my life. Like, that was it. Like, you know, this idea of I'm going to just do this for a while and then change, that was not going to work. And I knew that from hard experience. I would lose weight and gain it back, lose weight and gain it back. The other piece that I understood is, you know, I noticed that I had to figure out how to cope with my life or the stresses of my life without turning to food. And that meant that I had to pick up some new habits. Because my habit when I got stressed was to turn to food. So back to your point about habit substitution, like if you pick up different habits, they can crowd out old habits. That was one of the things that I had to learn to do was, ooh, I'm feeling stressed. Let me have a new habit so that I'm not going to the old one.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. And I think it, you know, let me reiterate a couple of points with that. One is that behavior change is a skill. You can get good at figuring out, well, instead of going to food, what do I do instead? And the other is, skills in two ways. One is, here's a very particular skill I learned. Whenever I'm stressed for food, I'm going to reach for broccoli instead. And then there's a more meta skill of, given this problem I want to change in my life, how do I think it through and come up with the new solution? And so I'm going to hit that again. Behavior change is a skill, and you get better at it by practicing in the right way. And having guides help you practice is super valuable because we're not really taught in our culture the right way to learn how to change your behavior. And there aren't that many guides that have figured it out. You know, I think that's one of the, I gave a talk at TEDx Maui, and that was my main point is, you know, you can get better at changing your behavior, and it takes practice. Just like any other thing that you aspire to in your life, it takes practice, and it doesn't mean you have to be perfect. The point of practice isn't being perfect, it's to increase your skill, and sometimes you'll push to the edge and, you know, not execute like you want because you're pushing yourself to the edge of your skill. For example, if I'm working on a piano piece, I might have it fine at regular tempo, and then I'll up the tempo to the point where I am at the point of failure or I'll mess up. But by pushing it to that edge, I'm increasing the skill. And there's ways in tiny habits where, not at the beginning, but later as you're pushing harder on the skill, you say try to do 10 tiny habits in a week, or you try to grow your tiny habits bigger, or you try a new position in your day for that new behavior. All of this, think of it as little drills on the piano, where you may or may not keep that behavior, but what you're doing is you're increasing your skill.
Wow, I love that so much about how it's a skill and that you play with it to develop it and that you push yourself, you know, to your point, not right off the bat. You know, when I was first trying to do this with the weight, I mean, it was just all I could do to just focus. But what I love about you and your work and why you are such an effective guide and I wanted to have you on the program was because this idea of making it small, pulling it in, and then just continually doing that, that makes it much more accessible for people.
Yeah. And one way to think about it, and I haven't talked very much about this, but Pamela, in some ways, this is a scoop.
Ooh, love scoops.
Yeah,
awesome.
What matters isn't, I think, for long-term change and for lots of good things, it's not so much the size of your successes, but the frequency of your successes.
Yes, agreed.
And so if you design your life so you have frequent successes, even though they're tiny, your brain doesn't distinguish very well, it distinguishes some, but not very well between big and small successes. And then part of it is not only setting yourself up for the small successes, but it's recognizing the small things you do that are succeeding. So you might not even have to change your behavior at all, other than have some time or a way to recognize, like, wow, I actually succeeded on that. Good for me.
That's one of the reasons that I have people do this daily success list.
Nice.
Because that piece, and in my coaching, what I have found is that there's a way in which we have that moment of success, we cheer ourselves, and then we are immediately on to the next thing that we haven't yet done. And so we never get to fully experience all the successes that we've had. It's almost like we're in continual deficit. You know, and it's really, you can't create from deficit.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing to build on.
I love that idea of a success list. That's great.
Yeah. So when what you're talking about in terms of how our mind doesn't really distinguish, but in the quality of it, all of a sudden there's a shift.
Mm-hmm.
What that daily success list does is it shows us the quantity. And then over time, we start to see the progress that we've made, because that's another thing that, you know, your tiny habits over time result in huge shifts.
Yeah, it's, the accumulation of changing a bunch of small things in your life adds up. The shift in your confidence gets you to step up to bigger things. And the, what I call success momentum, the history of success, helps you persevere when you have setbacks. Mm. And all those things come together.
Mm. I love that. Oh my God, I could talk to you forever about this topic.
We should talk again at this point.
Yeah, we should. I will have you back on the show because there's so much more to cover in this. So we will definitely have you back. However, I want to close by asking you two things that you do to lift your life.
Oh my gosh. I think one of them absolutely is be out in nature. In fact, I moved up to Sonoma County by a river so I could be out in nature very, very easily. You don't have to move to do that, but just getting outside, or actually we have tons of houseplants too, but for me it's get out in nature. Something about that. The other thing is dancing.
Love that. What kind of dancing?
Mostly just on my own, because there's not like any formal dance opportunities that are easy. Like last night, I was working out in my garage, and I started the workout with a dance, and I ended it with a dance. I just had 80s music on, and it's just, there's something there's something really powerful about dancing. And even if you're dancing by yourself, in some ways that's even better because you can just really let go. I crank up the music and I just dance.
You are a man after my own heart, because that would be me cranking up the music, dancing through the kitchen and singing along and all of that. So love, love, love that. Well, thank you, BJ, so much for being on the show this day. And we will definitely have you back to talk more about how we can make change in our lives by using tiny habits.
It's fun to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks.